Computer. Well, hello and welcome to our latest ICP podcast as part of our series of ICP Voices, where we take the opportunity to speak to members of ICP in different parts of the world and hear a little bit about their experiences and what's towards the top of their agenda. I'm delighted today to have the opportunity to have an informal discussion with Kevin Rama from British Columbia. And Kevin, thank you so much for finding the time to speak to us today.
My pleasure, Peter, and thank you for the invitation.
Kevin, I very much enjoyed a few informal chats that we've had, and I'm sure ICP members and those who follow the activities of ICP would be interested just to hear from you about what the school scene is like in British Columbia.
Well, thank you for that. So I work as the executive director for the BC Principals and Vice Principals Association. Membership in our organization is voluntary, and we have about 2,600 members in all 60 school districts across the province. In our governance structure, each of our individual districts have their own principal and vice principal chapter. And last weekend, we had a chapter council meeting. So three times a year, we bring our chapters together to talk about current issues and successes and challenges for our members across the province. One of the members walking into the ballroom where we had, you know, our first in-person meeting in a couple of years at that hotel just said, I'm exhausted. And I said, well, you're in good company because you're going to be a room full of other exhausted people as well. And so, I think that as principals and vice principals around the world have really try to do their best to keep the schools healthy and safe and open. It's come at a bit of a human cost, particularly for our members. So they're significantly fatigued, and we've made a point in our organization of not using the terms new normal or near normal. I think every time we start talking about things, we end up with another wave of the pandemic. And so, but hopeful that as our school year is coming to a close for the summer, we're about 6 weeks away, that we start the fall with some return to some regular routines and procedures in schools.
That's interesting, Kevin, because I know in my patch in England, a lot of school leaders feel that perhaps government policymakers have been a bit too quick to call the end of the pandemic. And certainly here we've got a return to things like examinations for pupils just started today taking their exams. It sounds like your colleagues are feeling the same, but the pandemic is still perhaps hasn't quite finished with them.
Absolutely. And so we're seeing, while restrictions have eased in British Columbia, case counts continue to increase. And so, and it's made it quite challenging for our members, particularly one of our members would describe, and I think aptly, it's a staffing pandemic now, not necessarily a COVID pandemic. And I think what he meant by that is, you know, we've grown accustomed to sort of dealing with the pandemic and the virus, and you know, we have a high rate of vaccination and boosters in BC, and people who are getting it aren't necessarily getting sick as they once were or being hospitalized, but people have to stay away. And we saw a significant staffing shortage pre-pandemic. So the pandemic has really magnified that. So schools in British Columbia provincially only closed for about 2 weeks at the very beginning of the pandemic. Schools largely stayed open. We did have pockets where individual schools might have to close, and really related to staffing, there just weren't enough staff members to be able to staff the schools safely. But by and large, schools stayed open. And so what we have seen is that with significant staffing shortages, principals and vice principals on a daily basis have to reorganize their schools to deal with those staffing issues or pick up a couple of classes because a teacher is unavailable or an educational assistant is unavailable. And so they have done double and triple duty for the most part for the last couple of years. As an organization, we're very concerned about work intensification and well-being issues for our members. We have seen an unfortunate spike in long-term disability cases for our members, and that's only been exacerbated as a result of the pandemic. So hopefully, keeping my fingers crossed, returning potentially some normal procedures might give them some of the a bit of respite from the work that they're doing and having staffing levels return to somewhat normal levels, hopefully. But I would also say, and I think many jurisdictions around the world are feeling this, I think principals and vice principals have really been hanging on by their fingernails during this crisis. And what we know from our survey data that tells us they don't have a lot left in the tank, but when you ask them to give more, they give more, and that's just not sustainable. So we are quite worried about our members potentially crashing once we get to that, and I hesitate to use that new near normal or new normal stage, because I think that's typical of how people endure a crisis. They can hold things together during the crisis, but when the crisis is over, I think that's when people tend to fall apart.
I think that's a very, very perceptive point, and the thing that's really strikes me is how much the experiences of colleagues in British Columbia chimes in with the experiences that ICP are hearing around the world of principals and leaders more generally, just having gone the extra mile repeatedly. But there just comes a point where you just reach the limit, and I think sometimes policymakers are slower to realize because we're a bit further away from events on the ground, but you know you can't just keep asking people to go above and beyond the normal requirements of the job. There has to be a point where you give them some space to recharge and, as you say, put fuel back in the tank.
Absolutely, yes.
And one of the challenges that globally ICP is picking up as a result of that is that in some cases it's getting difficult to bring through the next generation of leaders to almost to sell the job of being a principal or a deputy principal to people lower down schools. Are you finding that? How challenging is recruitment to senior posts?
We are, you know, I think part of the challenge I think is there's some work to do as a provincial association to really, I think, shine a spotlight on the positive aspects of the job and change the narrative to a degree. I love the work that I do, and I feel very grateful to be in the position that I'm in, but I love being a principal, and that was really my dream job. And so I think as our organization, we have just begun working with aspiring teacher leaders. Up until this point, school districts were really responsible for the recruitment, sort of the training in the early days of someone moving from being a teacher, say, traditionally to the vice principal position. In the last few years, we're putting some programming together to support aspiring teaching leaders who are interested in moving to school leadership. Now, initially, just through word of mouth, we ran a Saturday morning series for aspiring teacher leaders. And we thought maybe we'll get 30 or 40 teachers who are interested. And we were actually quite overwhelmed by the response. So I'm encouraged by that. It seems to me that there are still teachers out there who aspire to do this work, and it's important for recruitment issues because we're, like many other jurisdictions around the world, we're an aging population. We also run retirement seminars at the opposite end for those who are thinking about retiring. And our team here in the office let me know that we had more than 10% of our membership participate in a retirement seminar. That doesn't necessarily mean they're planning on retire, but certainly they're thinking about it. And so that puts us in an interesting position as an organization to make sure that we have capable, qualified people who are doing that work. One of the interesting ahas as part of that process is we have a number of teachers who participate in the process and said, well, now that I better understand the job and the responsibilities, it's not for me. And I think that's healthy as well.
Yeah.
For people to understand, they get a better sense of what's expected of them and then realize, well, maybe I'm better serving the system, staying in the classroom and where I am at this point. Our provincial government does recognize there are some significant workforce issues that need to be addressed in K-12 and outside of our sector. The economy in BC is growing faster than we can supply workers to meet the needs of the economy. And so, 100,000 people moved to British Columbia in a pandemic last year. And so still that's not enough to keep up with the needs of the economy. So some things will have to change, I think, in terms systemically to make sure that we have the teachers, the educational assistants, the principals and vice principals that we need moving forward.
That's very interesting. And I couldn't agree with you more that as someone who retired from being a full-time principal at Christmas, I love my work with ICP, but I must admit I miss the day-to-day contact with school as well. It's a wonderful job, I think, being a principal.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. As you say, not necessarily for everyone. But that sounds like you're doing some really powerful, really worthwhile sort of locally based solutions to bring that next generation through. And I suppose a linked question to that, but I think our ICP members will be interested to hear about. We're already planning, as you know, Kevin, our next council meeting in Singapore at the end of October. Yes. And we're going to focus on that whole area of future schools and future leadership and, you know, thinking about what that might involve going forward. Other than the sort of, you know, the challenges of recruitment and retention, what would you say are at the top of the agenda for leaders and indeed leadership organizations in British Columbia?
There is, even more recently, with our current government that now has had a majority, the underpinnings of truth and reconciliation with Indigenous communities in BC is a huge priority. And it's a large priority of the work that we're doing, particularly sort of serve those groups that have been underserved or marginalized for a number of years. I say this from the perspective of a middle-aged white guy who has, a lot to learn about these things. So more and more for our organization, we're trying to better understand who our members are in terms of the diversity of our membership. For a number of years, we've had an Indigenous Leadership Advisory Committee, and one of their goals is really, how do we encourage teachers of Indigenous ancestry to move into school leadership? Mm-hmm. The research, particularly the American research, is clear that Black students do better when they have a Black principal or vice principal. And so that's a huge priority for our organization to really make sure that that thread of equity filters through all of the work that we do as an organization moving forward. And so that, as I mentioned, it's a huge priority of our government. It's a significant priority of our association as well, to really better understand the needs of our sort of more diverse members, more diverse students, and making sure they have a voice within our organization, and that our programming is designed to serve their needs as well.
Mm. Again, really interesting to hear in that the echoes from certainly from my own area, ASCL, my home association in England. Again, diversity and increasing diversity amongst leaders is pretty well at the top of their agenda, and was there. They had a big conference at the end of March with a 1,000 or so leaders attending, and that was for, you know, one of the very prominent themes that was featured there. So I think what you're highlighting seems to be an emerging global priority for leaders.
Very much so.
Yeah. So it's interesting what you're saying, that you're trying not just to talk about things in terms of, you know, new normal or so on, because we quite know what normal is. We're also, one of the other things we find in England is that people almost feel, do you know what, I've had enough of talking about about pandemic related issues.
Yes.
You know, I want to go on and get back to the day-to-day challenges, perhaps, of school leadership. Is that part of what you found as well?
Absolutely. You know, and I think the most recent example was just a couple of days ago with our chapter council meeting, and really talking to our members as well who want to get back to the normalcy. A lot of professional learning and development has really been on hold for a number of reasons. First off, our members have had difficulty participating in the programming that we're offered because they can't get release time. There are not enough bodies to free them up during the school day so they can participate. And hopefully we'll get back in the fall where that's less of an issue. But I think their entire focus has been on health and safety issues. And so I had one of our members describe it this way, which I think was helped me understand as a person not working in schools. And his example was, I'm right-handed. I now find I have to do everything with my left hand. And by that, he meant within the health and safety expectations with the pandemic, everything, it's taken a considerable amount of time to sort of change his thinking. And all of those procedures are now pandemic procedures. And how do you hold an assembly or potentially have a field trip or have people come into the office or the school, all within making sure that you're sticking to those health and safety guidelines. And it's been quite exhausting. So I think our members have been, for the last couple of years, really focused on the managerial tasks of running their schools. That's really been overwhelming. And now they want to get back to what brought them into the job, and was that educational instructional leadership piece. And so, you know, we're looking forward to, I think we've learned some good lessons during the pandemic. We've used Zoom and a couple of other platforms to better connect with our members and connect our members to each other. And so those are some things that we will continue to do moving forward. But I'm getting back to when people ask me, if I go to a party and I meet new people and they say, what do? I say, I work for a leadership development organization. If they want more details, I talk about the work of principals and the work that we do as an organization. And there are lots of things that we do as an organization, but I think at our core, the BC Principals and Vice Principals Association is a leadership development organization. And so we're looking forward to having greater participation from our members in those pieces and broadening and expanding our leadership development offerings for our members. We, unlike the majority of provinces and territories in the country, there's not a provincial approach to leadership development in BC. We've been advocating with our government for a number of years. Mm-hmm. There should be. And I think we're starting to see some movement on that, and excited about the possibility that it brings.
Yeah, that's because I think that's so powerful what you said, that I think all of us want to get back to the things that really took us into the profession, leadership, developing leadership, thinking forward, facing fresh challenges, and as you said, very shrewdly moving away from the more managerial aspects of the role, which have been necessary, but perhaps aren't the things that for so many of us gets our pulse racing, as it were. It's not exactly what gets you out of bed in the morning, is it really?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And again, takes us back to that whole theme of future schools and future leaders. But, you know, we're so excited about exploring at our Council Plus meeting in Singapore in October.
And we are looking forward. This will be the first council meeting where the BCPPPA has had representation. So our president will be there, and myself, and Brilliant. Perhaps a couple of other members of our team, and really looking forward to connecting with ICP in person in October.
And that is fantastic. And thank you for those comments, Kevin, because I hope that's going to inspire other ICP members to come and join us as well. Because as you just summed up so well, after those, you know, those years where for very, very good reasons, everything has had to be online, I think it's going to mean so much to all of us, this chance to connect face-to-face, to see new friends, to connect with old friends.
Absolutely.
And to, you know, as we've all, both just been saying, to continue that process of learning from one another that is so powerful and certainly, you know, has made such a difference to me in my professional experience
over
a number of years. Kevin, on behalf of all of us, thank you so much. I've learned a great deal speaking to you this afternoon, and I'm now much better informed about the situation and also encouraged about some of the echoes in your experience that come through from my experience here and the experience of others around the world. And very much look forward to continuing those discussions with you, not least in Singapore in a few months' time.
Absolutely, Peter. And it's been a pleasure to get to know you a little better. And I look forward to seeing you in October in person.
Absolutely. Thank you, Kevin.